So welcome everybody. I'm Daniel Four, and I'm the founder and director at Ancestral Medicine. And I'm here with two wonderful colleagues, Sukina Noor and Rachel Jameson Webster, and get to know them a bit through the time. And I'm also still getting over a cold, so I have a little bit of a cough. And the intent here for these 90 minutes is to honor the solstice together. I believe the actual like astronomical solstice is later tonight, tomorrow morning, wherever you're at. But why don't we just open with a prayer? I'm going to do it that way. So if you would gift yourself as much as you can of the 90 minutes of the time to be in a space that's nurturing, restorative, and not terribly multitasking to you, but it's fine either way. But be with us if you can. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. I give praise and acknowledgement to the holy mystery that lives within me, within all others. Give acknowledgement and praise to my own ancestors and to those who speak through this land here in Andalusia and Granada and el sur de España. I give praise and thanks to the supportive powers and the inner light and divinity of each of those here, each of you all here, and those listening in later. And give thanks to the good earth and to the forces of compassion and kindness that hold the world together, despite a lot of other kinds of forces being on the move these days. And I hold intent that this time is nourishing and useful and connective and made relevant and brought into focus by the greater collective need, and that the tech holds and that we have a nice time together. Thanks for my life and for your trust to be here. Shame, I mean. So, hey, happy solstice, including for all you southern half of the earth people who might be celebrating the peak of summer. And, I assume you can still hear me if I'm speaking softly and just trying not to cough. And the intent for this time that we've set is channeling the world to come. So that's a bit of, it's kind of a dramatic thing. I'll say a thing about it in a moment. And I will encourage up front, if you have something to write with, to draw with, to render creatively with, that could be a helpful thing to have near you. It might be typing, whatever you have. You don't have to, but it'll be an invitation during the time for that. Let me say a word about what's happening with the organization very briefly before we dive into the rest of the time and dedicated ritual. One of our guests tonight, Rachel, and I will be co-teaching a course in January called Writing with the Dead, where we're blending direct ritual of ancestral reconnection with Rachel's skillfulness as a teacher of creative writing and published author and someone very focused on the process of actually writing books. And then later in January, I'll be co-anchoring a talk with Pat McCabe and Butch Ware called Colonialism, Cultural Healing and the Dead. And that is in advance of the next Ancestors course, which will be in the start of February. And the final thing I'll mention for now is just that the eighth cohort of the Ancestral Healing Practitioner Training is now open. And the theme for that cohort is decolonization, indigeneity, and belonging. So, not new themes necessarily, but definitely foregrounding the need to work it out in terms of the rampant ongoing colonialism still in 2023. Oh my goodness, Earth. And so, yeah, so those are invitations for you. The solstices in particular, I'm pretty sure are the most ancient holidays on Earth. There's a tooth I've been thinking about lately that was discovered here in Granada province in Ocre in the east. Is about 1.3 million years old. It's a human baby tooth. And That's just our species or our larger genus, as it were. But we've been trying to consciously align this weird thing that is identity or mind or heart or consciousness with the larger cycles for a long time, a very long time. And I think when we fall out of that entrainment, we do it at our own peril. And so I think one of the healthy moves is to try at least a bit to notice the cycles of what's happening. And in that spirit, of course, you know, at least in the north, that it's the longest night of the year. So I take that as a moment personally to wonder, what am I aligned with? What am I bringing through this portal of the complete narrowing of the year? What am I leaving behind? What am I bringing through? And so for me, it's a moment of recalibrating intent, making sure our loyalties and our alignments are clear and soul anchored. What's going to happen is I'm going to speak for not more than 10 minutes, and then the same with Rachel and Sukina. Then we'll be in guided practice for 10, 15 minutes. Then we'll have time for a little bit of questions, maybe another shorter practice, and that'll bring us to our 90 minutes. So let me go into a more focused space of what do I actually want to say about channeling? Why that focus, Daniel? Why are we talking about channeling? This has a sort of like new agey connotation for me, and so it's a stretch in a way, but then we're doing it all the time. And what I really mean in the broader sense of channeling is that there's an alignment, often unconscious, with bigger forces. Bigger group identity and identities, bigger patterns. We might be channeling some ancestral spectrum of energy. We might be channeling collective anger. We might be channeling the sorrow of the earth where we're at, or the many other beings. But for a lot of people who don't necessarily have a vocabulary for ritual, subtle energy and the spirits and all that, which is kind of most people these days, it happens unconsciously. That's not necessarily bad. Sometimes people are channeling tremendous love and kindness, like the really best of what we can do as humans. But they don't have a framework for it. They're just being really loving in a way that a very big spectrum of like beauty and love is moving through them. So without going way into all that, I mean, the short version of it is that we're not nearly as individual as we think. So might as well stop fighting that and instead embrace the need to set clear intent about where we're aligned. It's like if we're not being mindful about where we place our attention, there are a lot of places that are happy to chew up our attention for us. And so that guarding of our attention is a way of saying, when I use the phrase the world to come, what kind of world do you want to be in? I want to be in a world where humans are enriching the earth, not making war. I want to be in a kind of world where the supremacies around ancestry or race or gender or different nations or religions and all that are put to rest, and that there are tangible repairs for those confusions, and the systems are just and kind and earth connected in a way that people can like chill the fuck out for a change and like enjoy their day and not have to have this undue burden to fight for survival or fairness or breathing room. And that we can get on with the weird magic of being alive without having to mobilize to stop genocide and doom and these ways that we can be with each other. So just in a very general way, I imagine you're down with that too. But it's a different thing to say, I give my whole life to it. I commit like all of my body, heart, mind, psyche, soul, time, and energy and attention to that purpose. If you're like, when I think about like the topic of like focus, like what's your like what are you channeling? That's the question that's alive for me here, because we can't really turn, the only way to turn off that function is to say I'm totally separate. Well, then you're gonna be very unhappy, and cold in a way. It just like might feel good for a little bit, but then we're cut off. So what are we aligned with? And when I think of three essential ingredients, like you might see it different, but I'm going to say this feels like a truth to me, that if your way of grappling with what am I doing here, where do I put my focus, doesn't include these three ingredients, you're missing a piece. So one is the moment we've arrived at with such a horrible human supremacy toward the other than humans, toward each other, in a way that really needs to be transformed. And it's horrific and damaging, but it's also boring. And like the part of us is very artistic. It's not beautiful, the supremacy attitude. It's not really feeding life. And so there needs to be another vision, another way to be, another, like many ways to be, of course, not just one. So in any way at all, I think a meaningful life needs to include at least a drop of that. Of that larger project. And two, like the spiritual traditions on earth, of which there are so many, have a lot to bring to the table in terms of this process of having the capacity to really engage. It's part of what keeps me immersed in spiritual practice, because a lot of times I find spiritual circles or communities kind of annoying and like off-putting or demanding in weird ways and everything. But actually doing practices and having some kind of discipline, for me at least, it does grow my capacity to show up. And that matters a lot. And so having any kind of discipline at all, any kind of practice that says, I'm not automatically going to be wise and kind and loving. Humans require cultivation. They need certain nutrients. We need certain things to move us along. There are a thousand ways to get at it, but you got to get at it somehow. So, how do you reckon with what's happening on the earth at this time? What's your practice or practices to move you along? And then the third thing is being specific about it, being specifically you. I feel like it's my view that we have a moral obligation, an ethical obligation to be ourselves. And that it's on each of us to try to discern what are my gifts, what am I doing here, what's my role, what's my place, how do I contribute? And that typically doesn't come all at once. It's unfolding. But keeping it specific really matters. And if we have just two out of three of those, it's good, but it's not always enough. You can be very clear about your destiny and very spiritually connected and totally clueless about systems of oppression. That's problematic. You're enabling the mess if you do that. You could be really keyed into all the systems of oppression and really clear about your path, but you don't have any kind of practice internally to cultivate yourself. And it just means that there will be limitations on how much you can hold when you start to see the other layers or the spirit layers of the political problems you're working with, because you don't have a way to navigate that yet. Or maybe you have a great spiritual practice, you're politically keyed in, but you're just generally doing good stuff. And there's not a specific, it's not specific yet. It's not totally personal to you. And so typically when it's like that, there'll be a feeling like something's missing. Like I feel like I got all the pieces, but I don't know how they come together. But that's the part that's very personal, right? And so the mess in the world, our inner cultivation, and how and what our personal way of being with all that is. That's what I'm sitting with, and the alchemy between those, and inviting this moment to be clear about what we want to align with moving forward. It's a moment to be as clear as we can about that. There's a lot of trouble going down on Earth. That's nothing new, but yeah, let me leave it at that for now. And with appreciation, I'm happy to enjoy some wisdom from Sukina. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Daniel, and thank you so much to everyone who are present with us today. So my name is Sukina Noor, and I'm going to share a little bit about, I guess, how I understand this concept of channeling the world to come. But before I kind of go into my reflections, I kind of need to take it back to my practice, which is the practice of the heart and engaging with the heart as an oracle. So to begin, if I was to define my work or the essence of my work in two words, I would call my work heart work. As a poet, as a spoken word artist, as a writer, my aim is to speak from my heart to other people's hearts. As a poetry writing facilitator, as a mentor, as a life coach, my aim is also to help people access the voice of their own hearts so that they too can access the hearts of others. So I really engage with the heart as really the kind of emphasis of everything that I do. My heart is heart work. As a follower of the Sufi path, as a female guide for weary souls on their journey home to God, that too is heart work, because Sufism is essentially the purification of the heart, the purification of this sacred chamber that has the potential to be the abode of the Most High within us, a place that has the potential to receive divine inspiration straight from the heavens. Heart work, right? I also access the heart within my own sacred writing practice. If I'm ever overwhelmed by the world, if I ever feel as though I've lost my footing or in need of a source of guidance, I come to the heart's door and I seek out her wisdom. If I've had a spiritual experience that is beyond what my simple mind can comprehend, once again, I come to the heart. I come to the door of the heart and I ask her questions. If I ever need to be reminded of my brilliance or be reminded of what divine assignments I came to earth to fulfill, you guessed it, I ask the heart. I always go back to the heart. And I guess essentially in relation to this theme of channeling, and I don't think I'd thought about it before, what I'm doing here is channeling the wisdom of the heart. I've come to understand that my heart is an oracle and so is yours. And in the beautiful words, some of probably my favorite words that have been captured from Jesus Christ, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, right? So the heart for me is, as I'm sure for many of you who are connected to varying spiritual traditions, we understand the heart to be more than a kind of emotion center, more than a chakra point, right? But rather a portal, a space, and in this case, what I'll be reflecting on more is the heart as an oracle. So in relation to this theme of today's gathering, this concept of channeling the world to come, I have no choice but to engage with this concept from the perspective of the heart, right? As I said, all my work is about channeling the voice of the heart and listening into its wisdom. As we gather on the day when the darkness is the longest, I can't help but reflect on the fact that we are currently in and wading through a collective dark night of the soul. I am witnessing a darkness the like of which I've never seen before. I am simultaneously embarrassed by my fellow human beings and in love with my fellow human beings. For some, the darkness has become a state of being. For others, the pursuit of light has become a way of life. After the longest stretch of darkness, the light starts to edge back in. And so this is the time when we dream into ways in which we can weave the light that will illuminate our collective tomorrow. However, let us not forget that there is mercy in the darkness too. And once we've confronted our fear of the darkness can become our ally. We dream in the dark. Our darkest nights, on the darkest nights, the stars glimmer the brightest. We get to see the maps that teach lessons from heaven and witness the stars that guided all of our ancient ancestors. Seeds planted in the darkness of the earth can sprout life and someday become harvests of light. Channeling the world to come to me, how I understand this concept, is the audacity to dare to dream of a brighter reality in the midst of the darkness, while sinking in an ocean of black water, far from the surface and far from the ocean bed, unable to see your hand in front of you, but trusting that the light is coming. Channeling the world to come for me is striving to hear a voice of hope when you are surrounded by symphonies of darkness. Every melody is melancholy. Every note breaks us from the inside, yet still we choose to rise at the same time as the birds and listen as they sing a song to welcome in the new dawn. Channeling the world to come, to me, is the capacity to dream into a different paradigm of existence that you've probably never even seen before, but trusting that beyond the fields of darkness is a garden of oneness, of togetherness, of goodness. It's knowing that our role isn't simply to wait for this new world to come, but to walk out into the unknown, knowing that you are part of ushering in a sacred age, a bit like a midwife of light. It is knowing that light is a possibility. In fact, it is a necessity, and we are light workers whose role is to deliver a new tomorrow. So now back to the heart. I started with the heart, spoke about channeling the world to come back to the heart. The heart is an oracle. When the world feels bleak and grey clouds crowd the sky and the sun seems like a distant memory, the instruments that we need to keep ourselves warm may not be witnessed on the horizon. The tools we need to help us dream are most likely secreted within. For me, this support and guidance comes from the heart. So, in this gathering of channeling in a brighter tomorrow, my offering and my invitation to you is to consider cultivating a relationship with your heart. Speak to your heart and then listen. The heart has much to say. She's actually been waiting for us for a while to invite her in, even though she resides within. I invite you to learn how to become a channel for the voice of your very own heart. She has so much wisdom to share. Oftentimes, we speak about the heart. In times of heightened emotion or times of extreme clarity, we claim to speak from the heart. But how often do we speak to the heart? How often do we knock at the door of her chamber and seek her wisdom? How often do we approach the heart as an oracle? I don't know about you guys. So, my question is this: have you ever engaged with the heart as a trusted companion, as a sage with ancient wisdom? As a seer with a vision beyond your limited vantage point. The beauty of the heart oracle, the beauty of this invitation that I'm extending is that you don't need to go anywhere to meet her. I always speak about the heart as a feminine, by the way, just because the way my heart speaks to me is like an ancient grandmother. So I always have to refer to her as in the feminine. You don't need to go anywhere to meet the heart. You can sit right here, right now, and make an intention to develop a relationship on purpose, right? With this part of you that knows you and yearns to be known by you. If your thoughts are unclear on how to channel a brighter tomorrow, ask your heart. If all seems bleak and there is no light at the end of the tunnel, ask your heart. When the world is overwhelming you and you can't see clearly, ask your heart to show you the way. And if you are unsure of how to navigate this time of darkness, ask your heart. This vessel can hold the wisdom for envisaging a new tomorrow. So I'm not sure exactly how much time I have left, but I just want to invite you for a minute, just a minute. And we're going to go a bit deeper later, but I just want to invite you for a minute just to sit with your heart, if you're comfortable. I just want to invite you to put your hand over your heart if that feels aligned for you. We're going to go deeper. This is just a beginning, like a beginning introduction to the heart. Place your hand over your heart if that feels aligned for you, and just take a few deep breaths. I just want to invite you to bring your attention and your awareness to your heart. How does your heart feel in this moment? Is it a curiosity? Is your heart joyful, light, heavy, apprehensive, ecstatic? How does your heart feel? And I want to invite you to inwardly just ask your heart, just say, dear heart, very simply, how do you feel? And listen in for a response. The heart speaks in many ways, sometimes in words, sometimes it's an embodied feeling, sometimes it's images. But just ask the heart, how do you feel? And this is something that can become part of a regular practice, where you ask your heart a question and you write back to yourself from the perspective of the heart, right? So oftentimes, when I do this, use this practice in workshops, I always say, ask your heart a question and write back to yourself from the perspective of the heart. So not my heart feels heavy or my heart feels happy, but rather I am happy or I am ecstatic. Oftentimes, when people do this for the first time, the heart tends to be a little bit like that kind of elder in the family that you've not visited for a long time. And she's like, oh, so now you want to come, now you want to come visit me. So sometimes the heart can be a little bit sharp in a loving way. But yeah, this is something we're gonna do a little bit more later, but just to kind of, I guess, just to kind of encourage this dialogue, right? Not just, oh, I'm speaking from my heart, or but rather actually speak to your heart and actually listen for what the heart has to say. And I guess this can become a means of channeling. This can become a means of seeking deeper wisdom and presenting it. The final word I'll say before I hand over to the wonderful Rachel is just to say this. All spiritual traditions speak about the heart to some capacity. And if, like me, you love to indulge in the poetry of the mystics, Rumi, Hafiz, Saint Teresa of Avila, Mirabai, Saint Francis of Assisi, and all the others, one thing they have in common, I feel, is that they've learned the art of channeling the voice of the heart. And by doing so, they have tapped into a well of never-ending wisdom, right? It's the reason why centuries later, we're still quoting them and reading their words and seeking divine insight from their poetry. So it's just an invitation to consider in this time of channeling in a new world, thinking about the role of the heart in this paradigm. Thank you.
Thank you, Sukina, to leading us back to the heart, the center of what it means to be human. What came up for me as I had my hand on my heart was a little excited and almost childlike because I knew I was speaking next. But I was also reminded that the root word for heart is the same root as courage. And for me, that became a connecting point to some of these energies that I've been hearing in the two talks. So I feel like, Daniel, you are reminding us of the courage of being ourselves. Like you said, it's an ethical, you said it was an ethical call to become most fully ourselves in our lifetime. And I think when we really begin this work of co-creation and working with the divine, working with our ancestors and our guides, we are called out into the world in new ways and new ways of being of service. And it takes courage. But I think one way to sort of help work against the grandiosity of that is to remember that the courage comes from here. So I'm really happy that you brought us to the heart. Thank you. I took a minute to scroll through and see all the faces here. And it's so beautiful to see so many people calling in from all over. And just to think about that there are hundreds of us gathered around this Zoom fire, our version of the fire in our time. And then to think about how many helpers we all come with and how many ancestors we bring with us. And to think about this marvelous gathering of people who are here in honor of holding light and seeing each other's light in the time of darkness. The day of the darkest night. And the fact that our ancestors, as Daniel said, on any continent and every single religious path have celebrated this day. So this is a day that connects us to very long human time. We live in a very mistaken notion of time in our culture, like it's this one directional moving train that's all about productivity, and that is not actually what time is. Time is cyclical, and we know those cycles in our bodies, and it's long. The human story is very, very long. And so, anytime we come together on a ritual day like this, we are able to drop into that spiral and connect to our human wisdom, our human experience that really exceeds our own individual lifetime. So a lot of my work as a writer and a teacher has to do with working with what we know that transcends our own lifetime, because we all have memories that precede our own memories, or maybe we have inklings of the future that come to us in dreams, or this feeling of a call to do something that has to do with the need of the present. So we have a very complex relationship to time. And one of my questions for all of us, or one of my invitations, is how can you tap into what you know from long time? Some sort of memory that you may have that precedes your lifetime, or some sort of vision you have for the future, how can you tap into this and work with it consciously? And that, I would suggest, is a site of co-creation for you, that you already have memories and stories that you may be called to work with. You already have a vision, and you are already in some process of co-creation around that. So I think I wanted to talk a little bit about embodiment, actually, and the fact that we all have these gnarled, really vast roots of family trees behind us. We have this long, long knowledge of humanity, and yet we are right now the leaves or the buds. We're here in a body. And so we know that that comes with all of these delights. It comes with incredible sorrows and challenges. But it comes with the opportunity as creative people, because we are here in form on the earth. It's a tremendous privilege and a gift to be here. And so we also have the ability to bring things into form while we are here in our lifetime. And so I'd just like to invite you to think of that when you do think of long time, and you think of the beauty of the fact that we're here now. It can give a certain sweetness and urgency to what it is that we want to create while we're here. And as Daniel said, I'm a writer. I've published 5 books. In each case, the book has become an act of co-creation. I also have a funny relationship to the word channeling. I haven't used it in the past because I thought it would look like I wasn't working hard as a writer. But like I just received. But the fact is, even a professional writer who knows their craft and who works very diligently and has a discipline, as Daniel said, there, if a book or a work of writing is going to have a life force, there is some co-creation involved in my experience. So, in my experience, you can only approach becoming a universal writer if you become very, very specific. So we have to use the most specific materials of our lives, show up there, and suddenly we become porous and we're taken beyond ourselves. And we are asked, one sign that we're in a healthy co-creation is that we are always asked to become more ourselves, more authentically ourselves, and we'll be asked to do a little bit more than we know how to do. But it will be the right thing for growth. Again, going back to courage, because it will go back to the heart. So that has how I've experienced co-creation in terms of writing books and working with ancestral energies or archetypal energies. And in every case, writers tend to work a lot with the material of the past. But in my experience, if we're co-creating, the past suddenly gets animated by what is needed in the present or in the future. So in my last book, I was looking at multiracial ancestry of my own in the United States. And it led me out to meeting other descendants who are my African American cousins and working collaboratively with them on this book. So the book, which began as stories about the ancestors, became a project about the present and a healing, ideally, for the future. So that's what I mean about this kind of simultaneous, connected version of time. I only have one more very quick note. As I say all of this, I want to make one note about the idea of being original or doing something big. I think that those ideas really come from a notion of individuality that it's time to set aside and heal. And I had a great healing or awakening around this when I realized that the most extraordinary thing that had ever happened to me was having my daughter. Extraordinary. And then her father passed away, leading him to through death. Extraordinary. Ordinary. The most extraordinary things that ever happened to me were the most ordinary. Birth and death. The things that happen to all of us. And so once I realized that, I thought, oh, this idea of being original as a writer, as an artist, as a creator, as a co-creator, that's not the point. It's to be as human as possible, as connected to the human as possible. So, my invitation, if you do have a notebook and you want to write, is to go in and maybe jot down a memory that you have that precedes your memory, or a vision that you have, something that transcends your lifetime. And think of that as a potential assignment for you or a potential site of co-creation. And I'm going to finish with a poem I wrote for today. It's not a long poem. Feel free to keep writing, keep sketching, keep moving through this. The important thing is that you are accessing your own words. But I just wanted to honor us coming together today and our long embodied knowledge of human time in this poem. Winter solstice. This is the day we tip away from the sun. In trust that we've stored the serum of the light in our muscles and blood, as the wet roots and knotted trunks do, feeling the shy promise of the shoots, even as they stiffen under ice. To look at the stars is to see we are small specks in the drifts, gleaning our lives from a sun that pours fire, as steady and essential as a heartbeat. It is to know we are returning that shine, glowing in the elliptical swings of the seasons, as our ancestors did, who stood around the fire with hands that chattered and galloped the shadows, to tell stories of the animals outlined in the skies, moving through the paces of their lives. Their lives were like ours. Their lives were like ours, mythical and ordinary. And this is all one long story of the light repeating, retreating to return again, like these faces around the fire, both ancient and future. Here we are, precious, unprecedented reflections of an oncoming sun.
Thank you so much, Rachel and Sukina, both. I'm aware in our time here, trying to feel into the overall energy, that it's a curious challenge to guide a winter solstice gathering because it feels like the holiday of the year that's most steeped in silence. So I am, it's like, well, you know, I'll say some things, but don't want to disturb the silence with so much. That said, from what you shared, I really appreciate this undercurrent of not needing to be original. And also, Sakina, in that way, it's not, I don't know if you said it exactly like this, but it's not like it's my heart. It's not mine. Hey, my heart, what do you have for me today? Heart's like, pardon me? Like, well, my ego, and so this the ways that ownership and our hunger and loneliness can become aggression if we're not careful, and so yeah, just appreciating that there's so much of a scarcity, at least from my experience growing up in the US, like a scarcity of love that shows up as a scrambling sometimes over other people for attention or a moment. Yeah. So I want to bring us into direct practice because we can talk about things, but ideally, that always leads back to direct communion with those mysteries we're speaking of. And in the practice, we'll take maybe 15 minutes, more or less. And I'll start off, and then Sukina, then Rachel again. So we'll be co-weaving, but a bit more in guided practice attention. Excuse me. I'll just underscore one last thing before we head into practice, which is the piece you were picking up on also, Rachel. I know it has like this kind of heavy-handed, like Old Testament vibe or something. It's just like we have a moral obligation to be ourselves. It's an ethical imperative, a moral obligation. And it's not that the way that we show up needs to stand out one way or another. It might be our destiny to take up a lot of space or to not necessarily outwardly take up a lot of space one way or another. But when we are in alignment with deeper layers of what we are, we disappear in a way or become transparent, translucent, let's say. And that's really intimate and an antidote to this like neurotic loneliness and unhappiness, that sense of alignment. And it's not that our life is going to be easy or that we're going to have longevity or be seen accurately by others. But if our soul and our heart and our sense of who we are and what we're spending time with happen to line up, that's a good place to be. That's also where we'll likely find our most effective service. So just that. And it might, I say that because it's not always going to be where we would wish to be. It's not going to look the way we might like it to look. But anyways, most of you know that. It's a moment here on solstice to recalibrate. That's how I'm holding it. So I'll talk you through a practice, if and then me, Sukina, Rachel, will talk you through a practice. And then we'll have a little time for some shares and a few other things in our 90 minutes, hopefully. If you would, start to shift your attention to your body, your heart, your belly, your breath, your feet. Do what you know helps you to be rooted in your body if you're not already there. And while that's happening, notice your connection to the sacred, to your guides, to your ancestors, the earth, to God, however that is for you. Notice your connection to the greater. And from those ones that you're noticing or calling to be present, ask that your space be cleansed or cleared from any interference, any negativity, any energy that's not really of you and doesn't need to be in your space right now. Take a minute and claim your personal space a bit. And let there be a gentle layer of protection around your space so that only what is welcome and supportive to your life is allowed into that space. And from that place of being rooted in your body, connected, clear, and protected, take a minute of just open-ended listening. Is there anything your intuition, your heart, and your guides have for you? And if something important is happening there, stay with that. Otherwise, I would invite you to notice, if you can, what you feel is like the most authentic or core or essential layer of what you are that you're able to access at this time. Like, where's the place within you where your most authentic values arise from? The place where your identity feels really, the place you most want to be deeply seen and understood. Feel into that and see what you can access right now about that deepest layer of, yeah, this is me. This is my specific, authentic, deeper self. And see if you can rest in that and settle into that as much as you're able for a moment. And staying with that, I'm going to invite you to notice a different thing, but stay connected to this first thing of your center if you can. And the second is just to notice, such a big thing, but I was going to say the state of the world. And maybe you don't even open the window, maybe you just open the curtains. And you notice the sandstorm outside, or you notice whatever you notice. But there's a lot of really rough things going on in the world, as you know. But in this moment, from a place of intuition, without being pulled into the energy of all that turbulence, just notice the greater, and that there's a lot of commotion. And maybe you just glance for a minute because it's hard to not get pulled into it. But what I want you especially to start to notice is the alchemy between your core and your center and who you really are and in your best self and all the demand and all the beauty too. It's also a ton of sweetness in the world, but all the commotion. And what I want you to do in this moment is nothing at all about it. Just for a moment, but to notice the alchemy between who you are and the rest of life. Just let there be a charge there or whatever there is, and don't do anything about it for a moment. We could go in a lot of directions here, but the thing I'm wanting you to access, if you can, is a felt connection to your own center in a really deep way, and an awareness of and in not turning away from the suffering in the world, and that you can hold both of those at the same time. And if anything feels flooding, bring your attention back to your center. That's fine. And I'm going to turn the reins over to Sukhina.
Thank you, Daniel. So I want to invite you to go on a small journey with me. I need to invite you to place your hand over your heart if that feels aligned for you. And for those of you that have your eyes closed, please keep them closed. I want you to imagine that you've been invited, in fact, summoned to the presence of a holy soul. An invitation just for you. You are approaching the shrine or the sacred abode of this holy soul, this sacred being. Someone who receives wisdom and insight directly from the divine presence. Consider the reverence you feel knowing that you have been invited to spend time with such a sacred soul. Allow the embodiment, the feeling of reverence to wash over you as you approach. I want you to imagine or to visualize that you've now come to a beautiful, ornate door. You stand there in front of this door, with your hand on your heart, awaiting permission to enter. You receive an inner knowing that you are now able to enter this space. Open the door and see yourself in a sacred chamber, adorned beautifully and perfumed with ancient resins, frankincense, and ancient fragrant herbs. Take in your surroundings. What does your chamber look like? Take it all in. There are two seats facing each other. One is occupied, so you sit in the empty seat. The being opposite you greets you warmly and introduces themselves to you as your heart, the oracle within, the holy soul that resides on the inside. Sit in the presence of your heart for a moment. How does it feel? Don't say anything. Don't ask any questions. Just be in that moment. Be in the presence of your heart. Listen inwardly for any words that may emerge. Look inwardly for any visuals you may see. Just be. Now, I want to invite you to ask your heart a question. The question I'd like to invite you to ask your heart is, dear heart, how do we find light in times of darkness? Dear heart, how do we find light in times of darkness? Listen in for words, insights, inner knowings, images, even feelings in your body. The heart speaks in many tongues, but she always speaks. Dear heart, how do we find light in times of darkness? If you've received your answer from the heart, maybe you can ask a sub question or an additional question, which is, dear heart, what do I do when I find this light? What do we do when we find this light? How am I supposed to use it? Dear heart, what should I do when I find this light? What do I do when I find my light? Let the heart's response wash over you.
I think we've all gotten some messages, and I just want to invite you to bring some of the messages you've gotten here into form. So, whatever that means for you, it may mean movement, it may mean sketching, or if it means using your notebook, go ahead and jot down some of what you experienced and what you heard. And I encourage you to put aside that energy of duty that can come up around journaling. It's not about being thorough here. but it's about opening a space of continued communication. So you may hear continued answers from your heart. It may say things that she may say things that you didn't expect, or you may meet an ancestor or a guide. Just give yourself some space to bring some communication, some images into form for yourself. And you may return to the question of intention. Is there some alignment you'd like to write down for yourself, some intention as we go through this ceremonial day? And some invitation to expansion.
Okay. So before we weave out of the space of practice, anchoring, I mean, if you're in a flow with something, stay with that. But returning back for just a moment to the original intent, or one of them, of aligning your life with purpose and with the greater need, of being a channel for the world to come. The vision of what is possible in a good sense. Whether or not you know the details of it, if it feels right, take a final moment and set that intent in whatever way is right for you. May I be aligned with my most true values? May I be aligned with what's needed on the earth? May my life be one of service. However it is, take a moment if it feels right and intend that you step through the threshold of solstice with your sense of purpose and values intact. And staying with that, if you need to, when you're ready, you thank the powers that you called in, thank the wisdom elder that is your own heart, that is not your own, and gently start to transition your attention. And if us opening it up for a few shares doesn't feel where you need to be, then stay with the introspection or the practice. You get the sense of what we're doing. Gift yourself the time. And thank you, Sakina and Rachel, for the facilitation. And I would like to make a little space, knowing that we're a larger group. If there's just a few folks who have something from the heart, something kind of succinct that I know those don't always go together, you would want to express, it's welcome without a pressure, especially folks who don't necessarily join often or claim much space. You could, if you have that, you could raise a hand, and it's okay if not, too, but it's welcome. It's a moment for it. I see Petra. I don't know if Lily, you had intended to raise a hand or not.
I
Okay.
had it, yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
Just during the middle part, when we were asking our heart how to find the light, I just heard, felt both. To ask for help and to lean into hope. I just wanted to share that because that felt really apropos, I guess. So thank you.
Thanks, Petra. Yeah. Andre?
Yeah, yes, thank you. Thank all of you for speaking and for opening this space. My question was, in creating communication with your heart, what is somewhat of an antidote to possibly navigate, let's say, recent cruelty or betrayal in like a series, to open up to the relational field? I guess the question is more so how to get over the trust issue of opening up the heart after series of cruelty and betrayal. That's very loaded and deep, but yeah.
Oh no, so Kina is going to summarize that in 60 seconds. Yeah, I can see it.
Oh yes, just want to acknowledge. I just want to acknowledge and just send like heart love and heart transmission to just reach you, and I hope it's received, but in relation to whatever you may have been through. What I know about the heart and what I've experienced from the heart is that the heart is a frequency, right? And we have to show up regardless of what we may be carrying for us to continue to receive its wisdom. It's a bit like meditation, right? Sometimes we don't want to meditate. Sometimes we don't want to pray, but we have to show up anyway. It's almost like the antidote is in the doing of it. I guess it's also recognizing that there are many different understandings or layers of the heart. The heart isn't just the seat of the emotion, right? It's also a portal. It's also a place to receive wisdom. So I think I can't really say there's an antidote for the pain other than keep showing up. You know what I mean? At the kind of door of the heart, and keep asking the heart, ask the heart the wisdom. If you were ever in the presence of a guru or guide or something, can you and you had questions to ask them, ask the heart, right? And I think the healing also comes from receiving that wisdom directly into your heart. That is also part of the healing. Like, I have this oracle, like I have this seat of wisdom inside that can give me the guidance that I need. So I guess the only answer I have is just keep showing up, and trusting that the healing will come, the wisdom will come.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I would, the only two things I would add, and thank you for bringing that, is tell the truth about your experience and keep telling it. Emotional well-being and healing benefits a lot from us speaking our truth about things. Doesn't have to harden into like a specific story, but speak what you're feeling. And then the other thing is, it's a way of keeping whole instead of shattering. It's telling the truth about what's happening. And the other is notice what conditions for you support your grieving. You know, I've done a lot of work on myself over the years and therapy and every other thing, but I still struggle at times to access my grief sometimes. And, you know, it's not always predictable how it will arrive. It was a month of like being just horrified and speaking up and trying to participate around the ongoing genocide and ethnic cleansing is happening in Gaza and Palestine more generally. And the first moment I actually cried, so it was sort of protest, because I felt safe enough. I mean, I wasn't thinking about it in this way, but in think, reflecting on it later, the larger group field was holding what I felt like I had to hold personally in other moments. And then I was just able to touch the just how super sad what's happening is. And so notice for you and your and whatever you've been through that what are the conditions that are going to allow that softening for you? Because being with that makes a, our ability to grieve what has been really painful and make wisdom from that instead of becoming cynical or closed off or resentful, will shape the course of our life in big ways. So it makes a big makes a big difference how you navigate it. So thanks for bringing it here. It's good. It's relevant for others. Kelly, and then we'll see how much. And Rachel, jump in as well if you have things you want to add, of course. I just was instinctively going to Sakina a little there.
So, in response to my question around how can I'm trying to look at my notes, how can I find the fire? The image I received was to gather fuel, to gather energy, to gather helpers, and to build the fire to and then later, how can I support or what do we do with what can I do with that light was to build the fire and with others so that those that are in the dark could see it and be called to the light in the company of those that have gathered around. Yeah, so I was just very graced by that.
Thanks, Kelly. Maybe just a few others. Deborah, and then I see Wendy on my screen.
Hello. I'm very thankful to have been here today in this space. And I had turned the camera off earlier because I wasn't feeling good and I had to lay down during the practice. But what came to me was just be here now. Just be here now. And also, I've been working on grief and loss. And this morning, I was talking to my son as I was praying, and I said to him, grief and loss, it could refer to, loss of a loved one, but also loss of experiences that occur in our lives, that have meaning, and so we were talking about that, and many other things. I'm just very thankful to be here another year. Just celebrated my son's birthday and just being present with all this. I can sometimes become speechless, like with getting the words out, but just as the beautiful sisters have said, just show up, and be here now. Just be present with whatever is happening, and also, I've in my prayers, I request to be able to speak my own truth, to and everything that was mentioned here today, the courage, the core, the courage, the heart, the healing, the ancestral healing of the past, so many things. I just want to say how I just am filled with gratitude. And even though my health has not been the best, I just show up here and I look forward to connecting more with being with the heart, being with the heart within, and yeah, I guess I'll stop there. It's a lot of stuff. I'm more, it's better. And to learn from these wonderful teachers here about writing, because that's always been like in the back, like to write. When I started college decades ago, my goal was like write. I loved writing, just everything, and I turned it morphed into being a nurse, and taking care of everybody. And so now I can learn here about writing, and writing from your authentic space and truth, like just the way it is, not masked and sugarcoated, So thank you so much for this time.
Thank you, Deborah. Yeah,
Thank you.
Rachel.
Thank you, Deborah. That was so beautiful. And I actually love that you were able to be in darkness and rest as you received all of this, not only from ancestral and supporting guides, but even from yourself, your earlier self, who knows that you're a writer. So I really appreciated your words. Thank you. And I do feel that that's the key, is to just tell the truth about our lives in all of the detail. And that's when it will open up and you will feel this extra assistance and guidance. So thank you for being here and sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Right. I know there are a number of folks with questions, and we may have some time to make space for those. But I want to track toward having a completion moment at our scheduled time to honor people's rhythms and days as well. And in the 10 minutes we have left, I'd like to guide a short practice, like a revisit of a thing, and then allow a moment for Rachel and Sukina for any other wisdoms before we have a moment of completion. So take a moment, if you would, and just shift attention again to your body, your connection with the sacred, the energy around your space being clear and fortified, and there being a gentle layer of protection around your space. So, just be in your fortified, centered space. Notice from there, if you would, we've already attuned to your own personal center and your heart. Notice a bit about the support that's available to you. It might not be in the forms you would prefer. It might not be in the amount you would prefer. It might not address the harmful systems. that impact you. Even if it's entirely like that, nonetheless, you are not completely alone in the universe. So notice what is working. Even if there aren't many humans, living humans, who are available to you. Notice your support in the unseen. Make sure you're valuing and acknowledging the forces that are supporting your life. And there's a contradiction that feels really present for me these days, or a need, as we often have, to hold two true things at the same time, even when they feel sometimes with friction with each other. So I'm going to offer this in case it's helpful for others. One, in relation to the bigger troubles in the world, the first truth is our actions actually really matter. They matter a lot. Our personal choices matter. How we spend our time, our resources, how we treat people, just how we hold our energy, how we move in the world, how we show up actually matters a lot. Even when we're not valuing it, how we show up matters. Our lives matter. See if that's, you know, maybe that's really available to you. Even if it feels like a stretch, see if you can hold it a bit right now. And the other hand, the other truth, it's an obvious thing, but it has a lot of impact emotionally. We don't control everything. Our choices really matter. And you might decide, I'm going to speak up about this harmful thing, or I'm going to courageously open my heart. I'm going to do something that's scary, that matters. And the world doesn't meet you well in the way that you would like. Or the world doesn't stop doing that harmful thing you spoke up about. Perhaps the main point here is that you're steady in valuing yourself and knowing that even if the results you might want aren't what's happening, your dignity, your connection to the sacred is intact. That you continue to matter and be a specifically sacred and beautiful and worthy expression of divinity. And see what's there for you in just holding both of those truths. And on that note of really what I want to call self-esteem, self-respect, dignity, we'll transition out of the space of practice per se, and I'll turn it over to Rachel and Sukina for any final words, and just say from my side that I really appreciate your trust and your attention, and I hope there's something meeting you well from the shared time here.
Thank you, Daniel. I feel the same. I feel really moved by everyone's trust in us this hour and in yourself. and in your own guidance, and really honored to be here. And for those of you who felt intrigued or connected to the writing side of this, I'd just like to invite you to start a meditative writing practice. And what that looks like for me is 8 to 10 minutes a day. It doesn't actually have to be more than that to get a lot of communication. And that can be a space where you express the truth of your heart, like Andre was saying, where there's just this truth comes into form, and then you can start to move it out of the pain space because you've given it an external form. It can also be a space where you just record what seems like the ordinary details of your very precious life. And that too has incredible value for remembering that we have this sacred gift of a life. And it can also be a space of communication where you really open to those questions. You return to this method of communing with your heart, or you meet an ancestor and you let them sort of speak to you. So I know a lot of you are experienced meditators and ritualists, so you're probably doing much of this in ritual. And so I just want to give a gentle invitation that you may want to bring some of that to the page as a way of bringing it into the world and also kind of liberating yourself from some of the heavier forces as you find intention. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rachel. So I guess the final word I wanted to share was, again, in relation to this kind of journey that we've been on with the heart and this practice. And I just really wanted to encourage you all to continue speaking to your heart, to continue asking, to continue listening in. If I was to share maybe a simple sequence of things that you can do, I would maybe recommend, you know, finding a quiet moment. As Rachel said, similar with this practice, you don't need too much time, maybe 10 minutes. I would say place your hand on your heart. Before even asking a question, I would just pause, right? Just be present, knowing that you are desiring to make a connection with your heart. The reason why I say pause before asking, it was a lesson that I learned from my heart, because I'd always go in with these questions. What am I going to do, dear heart? Who am I? And all these questions. And I had this moment where the heart was like, be still. Like, let me speak before you ask me anything. So that has now become a part of the practice of just stillness before asking a question, just pausing and seeing what emerges from the heart. Of course, you're going there with the intention of connecting to the heart. And then you ask your questions, and they can be as simple or as elaborate as possible, right? Sometimes I think in the beginning, keeping it simple, dear heart, how are you? Dear heart, what do you need? Dear heart, what would you like to say, right? Beginning to kind of open the door. And as you develop a deeper practice with your heart, you can really ask questions like, who am I supposed to be in this world? What is my work in the world? You know, how do I understand this moment that I experienced, right? So I would just say maintain that. Another thing I'd add is that the heart is, I mean, it means so many different things to so many different people, but one of the ways in which I engage with the heart space is like a kind of sacred courtyard, right? And so for us to fully kind of receive messages into the heart and know that they are messages from the heart or from spirit into the heart, is that we need to be working on our hearts too, right? So whatever your practice is concerning polishing the heart or cleaning the heart or tending to the heart like a garden, I would say do that, right? Be in your heart practice, be in the process of just tending to the heart, so that the voices or the messages become a lot clearer. So there's that. Another thing I wanted to invite you to do, you don't need to do that, do it right now, but just something to think about is, I'm sure there have been many takeaways from this gathering, right? Moments of insight, wisdom, embodied messages. So I want to invite you just to choose one thing that you intend to take away from this gathering, right? One thing that can become an intention that you'd like to action in whatever way after our gathering today. And so, what I'd like to invite you to do or to consider is this one thing: make an intention. I intend to whatever it is that you want to do. And then after that, I want to invite you to transform. That's a bit dramatic. But make your intention a prayer. So it's not just, I, you know, Sakina, intend to be a light worker in the world, but rather incorporate the divine in that intention so that you realize that you're not alone in actioning it, right? So you can either directly speak to the divine through your intention, or make it a blessing, right? Just make it, you know, include words of, or incorporate words that bring the divine in, so that you're interweaving, or as we've been speaking about today, co-creating, so that your intention isn't just self-led, rather you're seeking that divine support. So make your intentions into prayers, as a kind of actionable takeaway. But yeah, other than that, thank you so much. It's been an honor. Thank you so much for entrusting us with your spirits, with your hearts, right, for this length of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Sakina. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, everybody. I just come back to this. There's a lot of silence that runs through this holiday, this moment. So there's a lot I could say, but I don't want to muck it up. And I'm actually going to end on time, unusually for me. Our kiddo slept really badly last night, so did we. A very last thing maybe is value yourself in your silence also. It's good to be a channel and create. And sometimes what needs channeled is the cool, spacious quiet of the night sky. That's not exactly what most people are leading with these days. And so, you know. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world. So let me end with a prayer. Pray that everybody here and everybody who listens in later gets something of benefit for their life and their path. I pray for the safety and well-being of our families, and I pray for an end to human war, and that the people enacting war be stopped, and that there are, in the year to come, there are more and more people who have a heart of real wisdom, who are elders, who are responsible leaders in more and more positions of outer worldly power. May there be fast, just, and loving systemic change so that we as a species can start to more fully inhabit our place as a lovable peer in the community of beings here. And while we're doing that, may we actually take up less space and dwell a bit more in silence. Thank you for my own life. Thank you for the team at Ancestral Medicine for everybody's hard work this year. And may Rachel and Sukina in particular enjoy particular blessing for their lives and families. I hope you have a sweet rest of your solstice and a blessed entry to winter or summer, as it were, if you come calling in from the south. Thank you all. Ashe. Amen. I